Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and Life Coach David Bartke here. It's Thursday, September 7th, 2017. Labor Day is behind us. And David, it's hard to believe. It's actually not hard to believe for some folks down in the lower Texas area. They've been going through some pretty rough stuff, but hopefully things are improving now. Actually, things are improving. The waters are receding and they're getting aid. So hopefully they'll start seeing a happier and lovelier time than what they've had, because they've been through some pretty miserable stuff.
Yeah, it's hard to believe that even happened. This was such a major thing.
Oh yes,
I hate to see those pictures and what those people are going through.
On the other side of the coin, though, we know that life improves. Life gets better.
Yeah,
that's the good news. And in fact, it kind of fits with the title of what we're working on this week, because we're still on Abraham Hicks's Ask and It Is Given. We're on chapter 3 this week, and the chapter's title is You Do Create Your Own Reality, which is a little bit harsh, perhaps. I mean, from the perspective of somebody living through Harvey, that may seem kind of harsh, but it actually works both ways. We create our reality in every way, and that can be used for the good.
Yes, and actually, before we get into that, I have a little story about kind of that would fit with that, in that I heard from an old client recently. He wanted to book some more sessions, and he originally came to me because he wanted to attract like his dream job, and he was out of work and he just didn't know what to do from a law of attraction point of view. So he had a bunch of sessions, and eventually he stopped, and he's just God let me know that he did attract his dream job.
Oh, wow.
And I was just so happy for him, because that's why he came to me originally. So I love hearing that people can manifest what they want. But the other interesting part about the story is that he told me a few weeks after he stopped coaching, he started getting into like a more low vibration way of feeling. Like he kind of went, he kind of spiraled down a little bit. And after a few weeks of that, he thought, wait a minute, I can control this. I know what to do. I know a lot of the processes. I know that, like energy attracts like energy. So I better take some action to deliberately make myself feel better, bring myself to a higher vibration, because I still want to attract my dream job and other things, that he wanted. So he deliberately took action, and he started raising his vibration consistently. And then within a few weeks, that's when this dream job happened. I like the story because it reminds us that even when we're at a lower vibration and not feeling great, that we can choose to do something to change that.
That's true. I mean, one of the strongest things we can learn is that regardless of our vibration level, even if we're feeling low, even if we're feeling down and negative and so forth, even from that place, we can turn things around. And like you said, it's a matter of deliberate choice. It's funny, when we're in that place that you're describing about your friend, and we're feeling that lack of power and so forth, and then we just consciously come to that decision like he did, that, you know what, I know how to do this. I'm just going to do it. At the time that we make that decision, it seems like nothing. It seems like nothing happened other than you just kind of made a decision. But it's an amazingly powerful point, and it's a transition point usually for most people in their lives.
I know, and I was obviously so happy that he had that realization, like that big aha moment. And believe it or not, I'm happy that he didn't call me at that time for more sessions, because this is something that clicked within himself on his own.
Yeah.
And that's big.
That's like big.
A big thing.
Yeah.
So I just love that story, because it just reminds us that we always have the power to raise ourselves vibrationally and to keep ourselves in a better way. And it shows, it's just more proof and examples of how law of attraction does work and how it does bring what we want to us.
Those aha moments are truly amazing, not because they're dramatic, but just because of how powerful they are. I mean, you have an aha moment, and like you say, it clicks. All of a sudden, it's like a light bulb turned on, and you say, why didn't I notice that before?
That's right. And even like when we've talked in some of our past shows, we talk about how we can't get concerned with how something's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he did. He totally did not concern himself with that. And the way he got this job, he could never have tried to figure it out, because it was like a friend of his knew someone else that was looking, and the other guy remembered about my client wanting this kind of job, and then it just through the pipeline, someone found him and told him about it. Like, there was no way he could have tried to figure out how he would manifest this job.
Oh, yeah.
That's another good example from this story, is that we don't know how things are going to manifest for us, and we can't get caught up in that, because once we start getting caught up in trying to figure out how, then that has the potential to bring us down vibrationally, and that's not good.
I don't know if you've seen the movie, The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel.
Yes, and I did see that.
And of course it has some really famous British actors and actresses in it. Two of them, of course, being Maggie Smith and Judi Dench, who are practically legendary just by being who they are.
That's true.
And the two of them have a really neat exchange during that movie where Judi Dench, in her character, says, I was trying to do certain things and things didn't work out quite the way I expected them to. And Maggie Smith replies, most things don't. But the stuff in between, that's the good stuff. That pretty much summarizes what you were saying.
Well, that also goes back to it's the journey that's important, not necessarily the manifestation.
The journey is what makes the difference, and the journey is where those weird gyrations happen, where things don't quite work out the way you expect them to, but they work out in their own way, if you let it go.
Exactly, and we don't know how or when, but they do.
It's an amazing thing, and it's a phenomenon that occurs over and over and over and over and over. It just keeps happening over and over again. It's crazy.
But I just love that all this is just more proof that when we keep ourselves deliberately at a raised vibration, feeling as good as we can, then we attract what we want. We attract more experiences that keep us feeling good and keep us feeling at that high vibration.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I don't know if this is the way it works for you, but one of the things I've noticed in my own journey is that I get these aha moments. I get these realizations at points in time where I first notice a pattern in myself that's been going on for quite some time. And I can't think of one off the top of my head, but I'll just kind of make one up because it's sort of generically true. Once you hear it, you'll see what I mean. Let's say, for instance, that I noticed one day that my typical reaction to bad things happening is to say, oh, damn. And just to keep saying it every single time, not realizing what I'm doing, not realizing that I'm creating a pattern there that helps to reinforce itself. And
right,
then one day
right.
The realization happens, right? And the realization is, wow, I do that every single time. Well, that can't be good.
Right. No.
That's got to be producing some bad results. And that's the aha. Once you have that aha, then you say, okay, well, what do I do about it? Can I change it? I mean, I've had this pattern for a long time that, you know, habits are hard to change. And of course, in doing that and saying that, then I'm helping reinforce the idea that habits are hard to change. But you see
what
I mean?
Right.
That's the thought process you end up going through. And I think it's important to note that because it's kind of as an illustration, because those aha moments, when we're going through them and when we're noticing them and experiencing them, we don't really think of them as being great and wonderful. We think of them as being, oh my God, what have I been doing? How have I been thwarting myself? But they are major. They're major because if we can commit ourselves to make a shift, to change the habit, to change the pattern, then looking back, you know, say from 20 years after that, or 10 years, or 5 years, or even a month after that, you can say, wow, that was a big aha moment. That's when everything changed. And that's what your friend started to experience.
Yeah, like he just had that awareness, took the right action, and look what happened. It was amazing.
In fact, the chapter we're looking at this week from Ask and It Is Given, You Do Create Your Own Reality, is the name of the chapter.
And
it's all about self-empowerment and empowerment of the reader, if you will, which kind of fits into what we're talking about here, because we're talking about empowering ourselves.
Yes.
We often think of self-empowerment as if it has to come from somebody else, but actually it never really does it?
No, it's always from within, even though like maybe somebody sparks it. But it's from within yourself.
It's from within, that's right. And it's that reconnecting, as we often call it, or re-noticing the within part, that's where the good stuff starts to happen. So it's good to be reminded that we have the power within us, that we don't need to have somebody else feeding us. I mean, especially for somebody who has perhaps a codependent streak, or a streak of what they often call counterdependence. You know, anything that basically says that your power in some way either comes from without or gets directed without and is not within based. those are all, they're there to distract you and move you away from the truth about where your real power is. In fact, reading from the chapter, let me read the first bit from the chapter here, because it's a good way to get the thing started here. It says, not so very long ago, our friends Jerry and Esther were introduced to this phrase, "You are the creator of your own reality." They had discovered the Seth books by Jane Roberts. And for them, it was both an exciting prospect and a troubling one. For, like so many of our physical friends, they did desire creative control of their own experience, but they were plagued with some basic questions. The basis of your life is absolute freedom. You were born with an innate knowledge that you do create your own reality. And in fact, that knowledge is so basic within you that when someone attempts to thwart your own creation, you feel an immediate discord within yourself. You were born knowing that you are the creator of your own reality. And although that desire to do so pulsed within you in a powerful way, when you began to integrate into your society, you began to accept much of the same picture that others held of the way your life should unfold. But still within you today lives the knowledge that you are the creator of your own life experience, that absolute freedom exists as the basis of your true experience, and that ultimately the creation of your life experience is absolutely and only up to you. And they're right about that. Every one of us has been, you know, socialized, if you will, or conditioned, or, you know, however you want to express it, into doing things the other person's way. You know, doing things the way society wants us to do it. Doing things, being things, living things, believing things the way others think. In fact, someone pointed out to me, I can't remember who it was, within the last year or two, that when we are, when someone tells us what to do, and when someone tells us that if we don't do what we want, what they want us to do, that we're being selfish, what they really mean is, my happiness is dependent on you behaving the way I want you to behave, and if you don't, you're selfish.
How dare you?
Which presents an interesting perspective on it. I mean, we usually don't think of that word selfish that way. I mean, selfish has a very definite negative connotation.
I know, but it's not supposed to, though, but it does.
No, you're right. It's not supposed to, but it is used that way, and it's used that way because people themselves feel powerless, and they figure, well, the only way I can have power is by manipulating someone else. Is by getting somebody else to behave a certain behavior, because if they behave that way, then I'll feel better.
Yeah.
Which, interestingly enough, actually doesn't turn out to be true. They get you to feel or to do or to act or to be in a certain way, and they still don't feel better.
But a lot of what you were reading, though, is so true. Like, you know, as we're growing up, you know, we're trying, I guess we're all trying to fit in and be a certain way, and we're not trusting our own instincts so much because we want to fit in and people to like us. So, and that kind of can interfere with what we believe and we don't believe.
And we have very strong incentive to go that route because, especially when we're that young, we are completely dependent on the big people for our survival. You know, our physical needs can't be met without them.
Yeah.
And we know it. We can tell. You know, without them, we're not going to get the food. We're not going to get the clothing. We're not going to have a roof over our heads. We're not going to have all those things. So we have to be dependent upon them. So therefore, we have to do what they say.
Right, and even in media, you know, in TV and movies and things that we see growing up, you know, we're not, for the most part, hearing people say, you can create your own reality. Like that. Oh, that we're watching the opposite, and that's even reinforcing it even more.
Wouldn't that be something if we had a society that taught kids they can create their own reality from the get-go?
That would be amazing, yes.
It boggles the mind as to how much of a gigantic leap forward society would take.
Yeah, or like if the law of attraction was a standard class in every school. That would be amazing.
I'll tell you, at this point, if I can just see everybody say to kids, you are your own creator of your own life and your own happiness, that alone would be enough. That would, because the law of attraction would come with that. I mean, you couldn't really avoid it at that point. But just seeing that without having the label would be wonderful.
Yes, but along with giving them on how to do that.
Yes.
Like, here's
which
here's
means
the
that the teachers would actually have to learn it.
Yes.
that would be daunting all by itself. I mean, there are an awful lot of teachers who, in and of themselves, they don't feel empowered.
I know, but wouldn't that be so,
they don't feel like,
be so cool, though, if, like, in every high school, law of attraction was a mandatory class, or every junior high, or whatever.
Well, I think it would be wonderful if every first grade was about empowering kids instead of taking the power away from them. People don't realize that about education, do they? That education is all about taking power away from kids. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Yeah, and trying to make things seem a certain way.
Yeah, they're trying to provide a... They're trying to expose kids to the right things, and they're trying to show them that if they get exposed to the right things, they're going to grow up to be happy and have successful work and all this other kind of stuff. So do it our way, and you're going to be great, and we're just going to micromanage the rest of your educational life.
Yeah.
And then look at what the results end up being.
Mm-hmm.
The results are less than stellar. I mean, kids do grow up and they do take on jobs and they do end up having productive lives. I guess the part that bothers me is that the schools take credit for all that. They don't seem to take responsibility for all the ways they held the kids back, and that these kids actually could have been even more happy in their lives, even more productive, even more self-empowered than what they ended up with. But the good news, I guess, is that no matter what the schools do, law of attraction goes anyway, and self-empowerment continues to be the most powerful thing, and eventually it catches on.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to diss the schools entirely. I mean, it's not like there are no teachers that want to self-empower their kids.
Right.
There are teachers that want to, you know. And to the extent that they're able to empower the kids, that's a good thing. I guess what I'd like to see is a lot more of it.
I mean, I know when I went to school, I didn't have any of that. So I don't know who's getting it, but I hope somebody is.
Well, I mean, there are signs that it's improving. Little tiny signs. Small steps. And that's the essence of the law of attraction, isn't it? Taking small steps in the direction you want to go. Well, they're taking the small steps. So that provides hope. That provides hope that the teachers are going to continue to take the little small steps and continue to relinquish a lot of the control. That's a big thing for them, relinquishing control. But hopefully over time they're going to relinquish that control, and it's going to become its own momentum. It's going to become its own vibration.
Yeah.
That'd be a good thing. But that's what this chapter is about. It's about empowering. It's about self-empowering. And when you first read it, it can be a little bit daunting, because that's not the usual message we hear. I mean, we don't hear from our schools. We don't hear it from our newscasts. We don't hear it from our politicians or from our religious leaders or our bosses at work or wherever else. But nevertheless, when you first read it, you say, ooh, that sounds good.
Yeah, it sounds good.
Can I have some of that, please? And being told that it's been ours all along is a little bit frustrating, but on the other hand, it's also a little bit encouraging. And I know that for me, my first reaction was, why can't I seem to find where that control panel is? Where is it? I want to get that control panel going. How do I do this? You know, which I think is the purpose of the chapter. The purpose is to get you, you know, wanting to try doing this thing. This whole thing about being empowered is daunting at first, and yet we have this hope and this desire that we have access to the control panel. And where is it? How do we make that control panel work?
Yeah, well, it rings true, though, within. Like, if you're in tune with yourself, it rings true that, oh, that sounds right. Yeah, we do. We must have the power to be able to do that. It just, there's something about it.
Yeah, I'm not so sure. I don't know if it rings true that we have that in all cases. I think in my case, it was more like, I wish I did have that.
Well, and
you know,
I was
coming
like
more from a place of I didn't really believe it.
I didn't necessarily know what to do.
You did? Oh, okay.
But I felt I resonated with it. It was like, oh, that, yeah, I can kind of feel that.
Okay, well, actually, then you came from a better place than I did when I first read this, because I wired it, but I didn't see how it worked. And so I didn't see how it could work, so therefore it didn't work, which, of course, is, you know, self-influencing, but...
because of your scientific mind again.
No, well, I suppose it's scientific mind. I think it's more of the psychology of lack. Because when you're in a lackful psychological state, nothing seems like it's going to work.
Yeah.
Nothing seems powerful.
Yeah,
nothing seems like there's not going to be a shining knight coming to your rescue. It's just not going to work.
Especially if you're in that mode, you're not going to be as receptive to hearing it.
On the one hand, I was receptive. I wanted to hear it. I certainly wanted to believe it was true. On the other hand, I said, well, if it was really true, I would have been experiencing it by now. Not realizing, of course, all the different ways I've been blocking it. And that's really what a lot of this this journey is learning the various ways that we block things, learning to stop blocking them, and then all of a sudden the stuff happens.
Yes. But what else does it say in terms of, does it tell you in this chapter, like, how are they still talking about just the idea?
It starts to lay down some of the foundations for how. This chapter is more about the emotional empowerment of it rather than teaching the mechanics of it. So going on, it says, no one else can create in your experience. This book is about your realignment with source energy. It is about your reawakening to the clarity, goodness, and power that is really who you are. It is written to assist you in consciously returning to the knowledge that you are free and that you always have been free and that you always will be free to make your own choices. There is no satisfaction in allowing someone else to attempt to create your reality. That's a powerful sentence right there. That's really powerful. There is no satisfaction in allowing someone else to attempt to create your reality. Boy, is that true.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
In fact, it says it is not possible for anyone else to create your reality. And that's a bit stunning for the reasons we were talking about, because we were talking about all the different ways that we get molded by our society. And so it certainly seems like that all those people are creating my reality.
It can seem like that, yes.
That's the way it seems, right? And yet, of course, that's what we learn in reading this book and in listening to other Abraham Hicks and other people who teach the basic concepts of the law of attraction. We learn that that actually is not true. It is not possible for someone else to create our reality. Uh-huh. And even when it seems like someone else is creating our reality, all that's really happening is we are bending to their will and doing the creation their way for them, which is also a little bit daunting because now that means, you mean I've been doing this to myself?
Yeah.
Oh, no. No.
Yeah, especially if you're just hearing it and you're not used to thinking this way, you know, hopefully you have like a aha moment even with that, like, oh, it's up to me. I'm controlling my reality. Like, that's a big thing.
And then the chapter comes back. It is a big thing. And then the chapter comes back with the reinforcement, which is once you have realigned with eternal forces and universal laws and with that which is truly the source of that which you are, then joyous creation beyond physical description awaits you, for you are the creator of your own experience, and there is such satisfaction in intentionally guiding your own life. You are eternal beings in physical form. And that is, I mean, this is the metaphysical side of what they're teaching.
Right.
But that, you talk about aha moments, you talk about moments that really resonated, that resonated with me.
You mean the eternal beings in physical form?
Yeah, that concept. Because that made much more sense to me than any religious concept that ever made to me. It was the only time I had ever heard it explained that clearly without having some sort of overarching agenda to influence it. And without the agenda, it all starts to make sense. It goes on, you are eternal beings who have chosen to participate in the specific physical life experience for many wonderful reasons. And I have to admit, when I read that, I said to myself, why on earth would I put myself through this? But it goes on, and this space, this time-space reality on planet Earth serves as a platform in which you are able to focus your perspective for the purpose of specific creation. So it basically just stayed the same thing again, but a little bit more wordy. Mm-hmm. And now it's starting to sound like this is serious stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This is wow. You are eternal consciousness currently in this wonderful physical body for the thrill and exhilaration of specific focus and creation. Thrill and exhilaration? Yeah, I'd like a little bit more.
I know,
please.
Right? Like, yeah, I'd like my life to be thrilling and exhilarating.
Yes. Yes, I mean, that now all of a sudden the sales pitch is starting to sound pretty good.
Right, because, I mean, the first time someone hears that, that could be like, oh, you mean I'm not here just to, like, work and suffer.
Yeah.
And just kind of get through it in the best way possible. It's like, no, you're here
and certainly,
to be joyful and enjoy it.
Certainly the opposite message that my religious background gave me. My religious background told me just the opposite of that. So to hear that was very refreshing. Reading that made me feel like, wow, I could actually buy into metaphysics.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't before. I just couldn't do it. The physical being that you define as you stands on the leading edge of thought, while consciousness, which is really your source, pours through you. Whoa, they just loaded a whole bunch of concepts into one sentence
right
there.
Like even the leading edge of thought. What does that mean?
Leading edge of thought. I'm not 100% sure what that means to me, other than the idea that Earth is where new thoughts get developed and tried out and experienced and expanded upon and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, like this, like...
But what does it mean to you?
Kind of like that, like this information is cutting-edge information, like the information that can really change things compared to other information.
Yeah, leading edge, I often call it bleeding edge, because on the bleeding edge, that's where you get cut up a little bit, you know? That's where you have to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune. But on the other hand, the good fortune is really good when it happens. It works both ways.
Yeah, but it sounds impressive, though, to be part of leading edge information. I mean, that sounds like,
it does sound impressive.
I'm in on that, you know?
But to me, the next part is the part that really grabs my attention in of just a few concise words. While consciousness, which is really your source, pours through you.
Mm.
So consciousness pouring through you. That's not the way we normally think of consciousness.
True.
Consciousness, we think of, aware. That's
conscious,
right? But they're talking about consciousness as if it is almost like an activity, as a stream of stuff, so to speak.
Pouring through you.
And they say here that consciousness is source.
And source is what?
What do you have in mind?
I want to hear what you would say. Like, to me, source is like God energy. However you define God, like, to me, that's source. We all come from source energy.
Yeah, well, I agree. And to me, that's what makes this such an interesting choice of words here, because they're saying that consciousness is the essence of what source is.
Mm-hmm.
And we are conscious. So really what they're positing here is something that is within the context of our society, particularly our religious society, very daring. It's basically saying we are God.
God energy, source energy.
We are God energy.
We're all part of that.
And in fact, as I contemplated that the first time I read it, I realized that there is a certain recognition of that within Christian circles.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Christianity teaches that man is made in God's image. Well, I can see how that could be like a little bit of a twisted way of saying that we are of the same essence.
Yes.
We are of the same stuff that
mm-hmm.
God is.
Well, that's like source energy.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's source energy. We are source energy. And to me, the only the twisted part of it is the idea that God created us. Whereas for me, it's not as if God came before us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Consciousness is source. So just by being consciousness, just by being conscious, we are a part of source. We contribute to source. We are a part and a contributor to the essence of all that is.
Yes.
And that's a much less subordinate place than what the religion wants us to believe.
Yeah.
It's much more of an active leader type position. Mm-hmm. Not Napoleonic leader. That's the sixth side.
Within yourself, leader.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's right. And that's where I started to really buy into this. That's where I started to realize that this had some pretty good stuff.
Leading edge.
And it was worth reading the rest of this. It was worth, you know, because the writing is kind of dense on a lot of this stuff in this book. And yet it was worth wading through it because I realized there was some good nuggets in it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, it goes on saying, sometimes you are fully allowing the true nature of your being to flow through you, and sometimes you do not allow it to flow. This book is written to help you understand that you have the ability to always allow your true nature to pour through you, and that as you learn to consciously allow your full connection with the you that is source, your experience will be one of absolute joy. So there's the promise right there.
I love that your true nature to flow through you, and you can tell the difference. Like for me, that, like, I feel like my true nature is when I'm feeling really happy and excited and joyful. That to me is what I feel in my true nature, and I'm thinking that's what they mean.
Oh yeah, that's the ultimate in self-empowerment.
Yeah.
That's basically saying you are as powerful as you could ever want to be, because that power is essentially who you are.
Right, and I think it's also saying, like, for someone reading it who's not in a good way, that's not their true nature.
Being in a bad way,
feeling depressed, feeling up, you know, down a lot. I think that's what they're saying, is that that's not your true, your true nature is not that. Your true nature is feeling joyful and happy and good.
Yeah, that's sort of the inverted way of what of saying what they're saying.
They're saying it,
I think, a little bit more directly. Yeah, they're trying to help somebody who's in that place realize that's really not who you have to be. You can actually be better than that, and it doesn't take a whole lot to get
right,
there.
We can, you know, any one of us could easily fall into that at some point, but just reminding ourselves that, like, wait a minute, this is not who I am. That alone will help you get out of that.
Yeah, we can. Heck, we all do. Let's be honest. Is there anybody living on this planet who has not fallen into that? No, of course not. We've all fallen into
it. The difference is, what do you do when you do? Are you doing something to get yourself out of there?
Yes. You do not have to maintain permanent residency.
No.
You can actually leave. You can get out, which is good. That's a good thing.
It's not like that commercial where they say roaches check in, but they don't check out. Remember the commercial?
Yes, right. We're not roaches. No. We're not the roaches of the universe. No.
You might check in to not feeling good, but you can check out just as quickly. You're not stuck there.
This is not the Hotel California. You can check in any time you like, but you can never leave. No. So going on, this is where they start to expand on this this kernel of heresy that they've thrown out there. The subsection is, absolute well-being is the basis of your universe. Well-being is the basis of this universe. Well-being is the basis of all that is. It flows to you and through you. You have only to allow it. Like the air you breathe, you have only to open, relax, and draw it into your being. And this book is about consciously allowing your natural connection to the stream of well-being. Uh-huh. It is about remembering who you really are so that you can get on with the creation of your life experience in the way you intended before you came forth into this physical body and into this magnificent leading-edge experience where you fully intended to express your freedom in endless, joyous, co-creative ways. That is both amazingly empowering and a little bit frightening too, because
so what's this
say to myself,
of well-being?
Yeah, what is that?
Where do I go? Directions to get to this? Like, is it like?
And why have I been denied it all this time?
Is it an actual stream where I can go jump into it, or what is it?
Yeah, can you drink out of it?
Metaphorically,
is this the fountain of youth?
Because that too, like the stream of well-being, like. I think we would all want to be part of that.
I think people will, at one level or another, want to. I think people often hear or read something like that and instantly rebel against it, so to speak, because they've been taught to.
Yeah, or it sounds too, you know, it sounds too Pollyanna.
Yeah, it's Pollyanna. Yeah, it's unrealistic. Yeah. You know, well, that would be a wonderful nirvana, but that's not the way life really is. You know?
But that's that choice again of when you're down, like, are you going to tune into the stream of well-being and help pull yourself up or not? I think that's part of that.
Yes. Well, that's what they talk about in the next paragraph. They say, can you understand how much well-being is flowing to you?
Yeah.
I mean, do you understand how much orchestration of circumstances and events on your behalf is available to you? And I have to say, I didn't.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You have to kind of live it for a while. You have to commit to it and say, you know what, I'm going to commit to realigning, whatever way I want to express it, aligning myself with my true self on the other side, realign myself with that source energy for the purpose of feeling good. And then once I've been doing that for a while, I'm really committing to it and, you know, focusing on it day to day, hour by hour, minute by minute, just being determined to stay in that positive realm as much as I possibly can. Only then do I start to notice that what they refer to as the orchestration of circumstances and events.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Meaning,
because you have to experience that.
Orchestration of circumstances and events in your favor.
Well, sure, that's the way we think about it, although it actually works both ways, because if you're in a bad place, the orchestration of circumstances and events can work to your disadvantage.
Yeah.
But even those are still not necessarily bad things. They're only bad in the sense that they aren't what you desired.
Right.
In reality, even the worst circumstances can be the best circumstances, as Joel used to teach us over and over again on the show, that, you know, no matter how low you go, once you hit bottom, there's only one way to go, and that's up.
Yeah.
So they ask the questions here. Do you understand how much orchestration of circumstances and events on your behalf is available to you? Well, I'm not so sure that you do in the beginning, but once you've been focusing on this stuff for a while, then you begin to appreciate just how much there is. And it takes a while. You have to go through it a few times. How many times? Well, it depends on who you are and your own, you know, resistance levels and so forth. For myself, I had to go through it quite a few times. But once you've been through it enough times, you begin to realize it does happen. It's bizarre. It's kind of weird how these twisted circumstances all kind of work themselves out. And you say, how on earth did that happen?
Yes.
But you have it happen often enough. You begin to realize that's the normal way of life.
Yeah.
That's the way things normally work.
I know. We're supposed to feel good. We're supposed to attract what we want. It's supposed to happen.
And 9 times out of 10, the way we're going to get there is not going to be something we could have predicted. That's what your friend
is. That's right. Yeah, we cannot get caught up on how or when. How
because
or
we
when.
Never know. Yes. And actually, I guess that's part of the reason why we are taught that this is the journey that's the most important thing. Because in the process of experiencing the journey and appreciating the journey, that's where we start to notice all these weird twists and turns. It's like watching and being entertained by our own lives.
Yes.
Just as we would be entertained by a movie or a play or whatever, and we're watching the twists and turns that the playwright took, so also we get our own twists and turns in our lives, and the playwright was us. We just weren't really sure how we did it.
And it's so important to keep ourselves feeling good on the journey because, like Esther Abraham always says, we never get it done. And that's why when you do manifest something you really wanted, it's not that long after that where suddenly now there's something else you want. So it's like...
The other thing that's really interesting that goes along with this is the next line. Do you understand how adored you are? And when you first read that in the context, the first sentence is, do you understand how much orchestration of circumstances and events on your behalf is available to you? Followed by, do you understand how adored you are? The first reaction is, what does one have to do with the other? But this is actually a major concept that Abraham Hicks teaches, not just through this book, but through all their workshops and their other writings and so forth. In fact, there's I don't know if you've heard it there, David, but there's about a 10-minute piece from one of the workshops where Abraham basically just went into this long soliloquy about how good life is and how good the law of attraction is and how good it is to be alive and so on and so forth, with the intention of telling people, you know, say this to yourself when you go to sleep at night and then when you wake up in the morning, and, you know, set your intention for the day at a really high level by reinforcing all these wonderful things. In the process of going through that 10-minute soliloquy, one of the things that they included in the list of wonderful things that happen is that we have, each of us, a cheering section on the other side, cheering us on every step of the way of what we're doing. Happy for every wonderful thing that happens. You know, basically pushing us on, saying, go, go, go. It's kind of like having our own, you know, fans in the stands as we're going through life. And you read that. The first time I read that, I said, well, yeah, that's cute. I didn't really buy into it. But as time goes on, I'm beginning to realize that adoration that they're talking about here is another way of expressing the fact that source energy flows to and through us.
Yeah.
And it's the flow that is the expression of the adoration. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. It's part of just like knowing you have that, as you call it, like your cheering section always on your side. I mean, if you really click in with that kind of energy, that's exciting.
It is exciting. The first time I listened to, and I actually transcribed it, believe it or not. I transcribed 10 minutes of Abraham Hicks, word by word, typing it all out.
I believe it because I've done that with their work as
well. Oh, you have?
Oh,
good. I'm not the only crazy person then. That's good. But yeah, as I'm transcribing this thing, I'm saying to myself, well, okay, this sounds good. Something good to aspire to. That's why I'm doing this, so that I can have something to, You know, it gives me a list of affirmations, so to speak. So I treat it that way. But some of them, I read them and I say to myself as I'm first typing them, well, yeah, that'd be really nice, but that really sounds kind of far-fetched. Interesting thing, though, is the more that I listen to that particular segment or read it, you know, either way that I do it, the more true they become.
Yes, and you kind of get it at a deeper level as time goes on.
Yeah, you get it at a deeper level, and stuff that didn't, that seemed rather crazy at first doesn't seem so crazy after
all. Exactly, that's right. It's interesting how that works.
It is. And it shows and demonstrates just how important it is to try to take small steps as early as you can, because you get guided to the point where you take more small steps and more small steps that start to fill in the pieces, start filling in the overall picture, so that the picture starts to make sense in a way that it really didn't the first
time
you read the whole thing or listened to the whole thing.
That's for sure. Yeah, I mean, you could hear an Abraham quote and then hear the same quote 6 months later, a year later, and it can mean something totally different to you, or you get it you understand it in a deeper way.
Yeah, isn't that interesting how that works?
Very.
I mean, what was the last time you can think of that happened to you? Can you think of one?
Well, I would say, because I watch a lot of the YouTube videos that she does, and I would say every time I listen to one, I get it at a deeper level. I really do.
Oh.
It's like, oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, now I'm always like in my mind thinking, oh, okay, I really get it now. And then like a few months later, I could even hear the same one. I'm like, okay, now I really get it. It's just interesting how that works.
So each time you get a little bit more, you get a little bit
like
more.
A little
it's like
clear,
that,
I guess,
you know, one of those books.
It just becomes a little clearer or something. You just get it more.
Yeah, it's like a good book, and each time that you read the story, you see something new in the story you didn't notice the last time that you read it.
Yeah.
Something that resonates a little bit more.
Yeah, like I can hear the same or watch the same video of Esther Abraham, and it always has something different I get out of it, which is kind of interesting.
Hmm. Yep. One of the phrases that I remember from that 10-minute soliloquy that I mentioned is they express everything in terms of I love this, I love that. I like this, I like that. And again, they're affirmations. One of the affirmations is something like, and I love the fact that Source revels in my new thoughts. And I thought about that word revel. That's a really neat word. Revels in my thoughts. Like, really gets excited. That's what revel means to me. Like, they get excited and thrilled. Like, wow, this is really great. It starts to make that cheering section seem more real, you know?
Yes. I like how that sounds anyway.
So, anyway, continuing this chapter, it says, can you understand how much well-being is flowing to you? That's really the initial question, isn't it? Because at first, you don't really understand
it. No, you don't.
You've read it. It's like, it sounds desirable. It sounds appealing.
It
like,
sounds good.
You'd like to learn a bit more of that, but there's that little or big piece of you that doubts.
Yeah, that can.
That says,
for sure be.
Yeah, well, I'll wait and see on that one. So it's a valid question to ask. Can you understand how much well-being is flowing to you? How do you feel about that? Do you have a sense of how much well-being is flowing through you?
Sometimes, and it's probably, even with that, I feel like as time goes on, I'll even feel it more. Because I feel like it would almost be so overwhelming to really be in that and fully in that.
Yeah.
Like you.
Yeah. For me, it's an ebb and flow that over time gets larger and larger. But while you're going through it, it just seems like a little bit more, a little bit less, a little bit more, a little bit less.
Yeah. But
you have to kind of have the perspective of months looking back to realize, oh wow, there actually was a progression.
Yeah, but I think if we allowed ourselves to fully feel that, we would just like, you know, just it would be like, wow. It would be.
And wow is where we're trying to get to. That's what I'm trying to get to anyway. I'm trying to get to the point where wow is my minute-by-minute experience.
Or it's above wow. It's like
above wow.
Maybe in a,
what's above wow?
Maybe on a human level, we couldn't even feel that fullness of that. I don't know. That's kind of what I think sometimes. Like, because, you know, I've been where I've been at like a 10, so to speak, on the vibrational scale. And I always think, like, I think if you really felt that full thing that you're talking about, I don't even know if that's possible. It would be like 100. You'd be at 100 or something.
And yet, it keeps getting better. So apparently you can feel better than that 10.
Yeah, but 10 is of 10. Apparently 10 is not... I'm not complaining about being at a 10.
I'm sure you're not. I just think it's cool that we get the reinforcement fairly frequently that, yeah, it doesn't have to stop
That's
at 10.
Right. Yeah, I wouldn't put a limit on it. I would not put a limit on it. That's
no.
For sure.
No. Yeah, it's just sort of a marker than more than anything else. It's not the top. They go on to say, do you understand how beloved you are, how blessed you are, how adored you are, and what an integral part of this creative process you are? We want you to. We want you to begin to understand the blessed nature of your being, and we want you to begin to look for the evidence of it, because we are showing it to you in every moment that you will allow yourselves to see it.
Wow.
In the lining up of lovers, money, fulfilling experiences, and beautiful things for you to see, in the lining up of circumstances and events, and in the lining up of amazing co-creative experiences where you are rendezvousing with one another for no other reason than for the fantastically important reason of fulfilling, satisfying, and pleasing yourself and giving yourself joy in the moment.
That sounds really good.
It does sound really good.
I'll take that.
And
that sounds good.
And it's empowering because we've been taught that you aren't allowed to feel that way. You're not allowed to. That's selfish, right? That's a bad thing. Well, no, it's not a bad thing. It's actually a good thing.
Yeah, then a lot of people have limits on how much good they think can happen for them. That's another thing I've learned. Like, some people think, okay, 3 good things just happened to me. I better brace myself now because now the bad thing is going to happen. It's like, no,
the
bad thing doesn't
Well,
it's
true if you make
thing.
It. It's true if you decide to reinforce it, then it's true.
Like, you could have a limitless experience of just the good things happening for you.
You certainly can. We all can. That's what we're aiming for. That's why you and I do this show. Because we're just trying to get ourselves closer and closer and closer to that.
As you said earlier, like, is anything really bad? That's interesting. I like that concept. Like, is anything that we take as bad really bad? Or is it just showing us a better way from that place?
Well, the question really is, what's bad?
Right.
Isn't bad really just, I don't want that?
Well, that's what I mean. You can use bad isn't so bad because it can reinforce, then, as Esther says, new rockets of desire of what you want then. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, now I know this is what I don't want. So I'm not going there again because now I know what I do. Now I know what I do want in whatever it was that happened.
I think the phrases, or words, good and bad, are a little bit misleading. But if we're going to try to stick within the context of those words, I think the only thing that's really bad is deciding to forever stay in bad.
Yeah. Yeah, from a law of attraction point of view, good and bad and don't want to, kind of takes on a different meaning.
Yeah. When you're deciding to be stuck in bad, you are, in a sense, consciously choosing to feel miserable all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're consciously choosing to accept into your life experience that which you do not want and to do it regularly and continuously.
Mm-hmm. And it's just
and
contrast.
I would describe that as bad. That to me is bad. It's like, no, don't do that. It's like, doctor, it hurts every time I raise my arm. Well, don't raise your arm.
But if you can think about the contrast is there to show us what we want, then it doesn't seem so bad.
Yes. Yes. If the bad stuff is used by us as a way to move away from bad and move toward what we consider to be the good, then it's not so bad. It's actually very useful.
Right. It's just how many years has someone had thinking about or how many years has someone had being stuck in the bad, because they don't know the difference. They don't know they can get out of that.
I'm not so sure it's how many years. I think it's how long does it take to them for them to decide to change their mind.
I'm just saying from a momentum point of view, like if someone has a lot of momentum in that way, then it could take a little longer for them to kind of see it in this new way.
And yet one of the teachings that do come through very regularly, including from Abraham Hicks, is this whole idea of how long it will take is really dependent on you. You can shift it in an instant. And in an instant, you know, it really comes down to how much longer are we going to continue to resist?
Yeah.
The moment we let go of resistance is the moment everything good flows in.
But at the same time, she does talk about momentum. Like she uses that train metaphor where like you can't stop a 100-mile-an-hour train in 1 second. You have to like slowly slow it down and speed up the high vibration train.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing in the Abraham Hicks presentations, because some of what they express seems to contradict the idea that it's up to you how long it's going to take.
Well, to me, that just means like there is momentum, but you can start slowing it down by changing the way you're thinking about it. I think that's what, to me, that's what she means, or Abraham means, is that, that you can have that second where you're like, oh, okay, yes, I do want something better, and you do start reaching for better thoughts, and that can happen quickly. But whether you,
I also like to remember,
like she always says, you can't get from there, from here to there, like, you know, you can't get from a 1 to a 10 instantly, but you can start climbing towards a 10 instantly. That's how I understand it anyway.
Yeah, I think what's really happening there is she's saying you're going to find that to be a much larger leap than you can comfortably do.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, don't go that crazy.
Right, because then people could get discouraged very easily. Like, oh, I'm starting to think better thoughts. Why don't I feel like I'm at a 10? It's like, well, because you were at a 1. But maybe you feel like you're at a 3 now, and that's still amazing because you're heading towards where you want to be.
Right.
Compared to where you were.
So it says, do you understand how beloved you are, how blessed you are, how adored you are, and what an integral part of this creative process you are? Well, we want you to. We want you to begin to understand the blessed nature of your being, and we want you to begin to look for the evidence of it, because we are showing it to you in every moment that you will allow yourselves to see it. In the lining up of lovers, money, fulfilling experiences, and beautiful things for you to see, in the lining up of circumstances and events, and in the lining up of amazing co-creative experiences, where you are rendezvousing with one another for no other reason than for the fantastically important reason of fulfilling, satisfying, and pleasing yourself, and giving yourself joy in the moment.
Yes. But
that's pretty powerful.
Yes, and it just reminds us that we can choose that. We can always choose.
We can always choose
to experience that.
And in fact, it's always available to us. The thing that happens when you first read that is that it sounds so good, you begin to doubt it. It's like, that can't possibly be. Because it's just so far away from what many of our experiences are when we first read this. It only is through the rereading and the restudy and looking at other stuff and rereading all kinds of stuff and just constantly focusing on the stuff that it starts to make sense that, wow, things really can be this way. Not only can be, they really are.
Yes.
And that the only thing that holds us back is our own resistance.
That's right. I mean, especially after you read the whole book and then you have even more information and then you go back, you're like, yes, I can. I can choose to feel this way. I can choose. And, you know, and whether that's bringing yourself up from that 1 to 10 scale, from a 1 to a 2 or an 8 to a 9, whatever it is, you can always choose to feel that way.
It's interesting, too, isn't it, how we resist without realizing at first that we're resisting.
Yeah. Yeah.
In fact, they don't actually use the word resistance very much, do they, in this book? I'm not quite sure why, but it's not a word that seems to come up a lot from what I remember. We'll find out, of course, as we do additional chapters. But resistance is really at the root of it, because it's the resistance that prevents us from experiencing all these wonderful things that they're talking about.
Right.
It's our own built-in resistance level.
And I think that's just from so much time practicing it that way. That's all. But I think once we read this, we realize, oh, there's another way we can respond and live, then it's like, oh, I'd rather live and choose that way than the other way.
And from that point on, it's a process of peeling back the layers of resistance, one layer at a time.
Yeah.
And just, you know, letting go a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more. I know early on, and actually for quite a few years, I had a little trouble understanding what it meant to release resistance.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have that problem? Did you experience
that?
Well,
I understood what it meant, but I didn't at the time always understand how to do it, you know.
I didn't even understand what it meant. What did it mean to release resistance? Because I didn't even realize how I was resisting.
Well, to me, it meant just having less worry, doubt, and fear about something and just trusting more that whatever is going to work out or manifest for you. But again, it was just, well, how do I do that?
Yeah. Yeah. It was, for me, the way I expressed it is, where's the dial?
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to dial it back, but I can't find the dial. Where is the dial?
Yeah.
Show me the dial, please.
But once you do find out some steps on how to do that, and you actually try to do it, and you actually feel the difference, it's like, wow, I can choose to do this. I can react a different way. I can react in a less resistant way, and it actually feels good, too.
Even more importantly, from my perspective, it wasn't just that I can react in a less resistant way. It's that I can actually understand what resistance and non-resistance is. I can understand what the difference is and what the two things are. And that resistance is really just me not willing to accept what it is that I really want to believe the most. And the more that I allow myself to believe, and the more I allow myself to trust and to apply and to acknowledge that this is the essence of who I am, this is the essence of the universe, this is the essence of who we all are, this is the essence of spiritual being.
Right, and like...
That's the essence. That's how you release.
You read earlier today from the book, that we're supposed to be joyful. We're supposed to feel joyful.
Yeah.
Like, that's why we're here. So if you kind of combine that with what you were just talking about, it's like, oh, okay. I like how this...
It creates a certain level of... what's the word I'm looking for? Of imminence, of desire, of intention, I guess. A desire and willingness to focus on learning how to remove that resistance and get it out of the way, because the promise sounds so good, and I really would like to get there as soon as possible.
Yes, yes, for sure.
So anyway, we're running out of time here. Before we go, why don't you tell people where they can reach you?
Sure, if you want to find out more about me, or maybe you want some Law of Attraction coaching, you can go to lifecoachdavid.com, and you can take it from there and how to reach me. And I also wanted to say a friend of mine is a health coach, and her name is Denise. And for anyone living in New Jersey, especially northern New Jersey, on September 14th at 7 o'clock, she is doing a program called Falling into a Healthy Routine. And that's really important for all of us. And that's going to be at the campus of the Holy Family Parish in Florham Park. And if you want to find out more about that, you can call Denise at 862-259-0641. So if you're in New Jersey, you may want to check that out.
And, of course, that's right in the middle of when we do our show, but that's okay. It's okay. You can actually go if you live in northern New Jersey. You can go to that meeting, that workshop, and then you can pick us up by recording later on, because of course this isn't just live on PRN, we're recorded. And that's one of the great things. You can actually subscribe to our podcast at loatoday.net, and that way, even if you have to be away on Thursday evenings at 7 p.m. for some reason, you can still listen to David and I and pick up all the wonderful stuff we have to share with you. So David, it's been a pleasure as usual.
Same here.
And we'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.